Thank you, Tim, and thank you for everybody to inviting me here today. I'm sorry I haven't been able to and cannot continue to stay for the whole of this forum because I really enjoy the discussions you have here because it's a much higher level when you're getting into some very deep discussions. Whether you're able to convince the government to change some of these things, I guess, is another matter, which is part of the problem that I have too. When Suzanne or David asked me to speak today and actually asked me to talk on future direction for business taxation policy, I said, look, I just can't do that. I'm in my position of the board. I cannot discuss policy, even though we're an independent board. But if it gets picked up the wrong way, as it did once, it's just taken out of context because we're seen as being part of the government. And so I can't get into the policy discussions, even though I have some good thoughts and ideas of my own. But I am pleased to talk to you a bit about the role of the Board of Taxation and the role it plays in the future directions of the business taxation through the legislative arm. Pleased to talk about that. Now, to some of you, I apologise because this is Business Board of Taxation 101. You people have, some of you have been involved with it very much. And when I was preparing this, I thought, well, do I cut out a lot of the lower level stuff or do I put the whole lot together? And I decided I better put the whole lot together. So my apologies to those who have lived with the Board of Tax over the last 8 years. There is a broad consensus that the taxation law, which includes the business taxation, should be directed at raising revenue in the most efficient, most equitable and the most simple manner. However, there's often less consensus about what may be equitable or how to navigate the trade-offs between efficiency, equity and simplicity. Now, clearly it's the government who makes the decisions about how to trade off competing claims to obtain what they believe is the best result for the community as a whole. And the Board of Taxation just becomes one of the sources of input into their decision-making process. Going right back in history, the Board has its creation in the Ralph Review of Business Taxation. That review recommended the establishment of a Board of Taxation to advise on the development and the implementation of business tax legislation. It was felt that there was too little or too late interaction between business and government, which often led to less than effective legislation. Now, the government agreed to establish the Board of Taxation, but decided that it should have a broader mandate to advise the government not just on business taxation, but on the tax system as a whole. Now, while it can offer views to the government on any issues within its charter, the work program has largely been determined by the Treasurer, although in a circular fashion, quite often we're the ones giving the thoughts and ideas to the Treasurer to give back to us. But a lot of it comes directly from the Treasurer, or in this case today, on one I'm going to talk about, the Assistant Treasurer. Now, the Board is purely an advisory body. There was quite a lot of discussion at the beginning as to whether it should be a statutory role or an advisory role. I personally, when I was asked, felt very strongly that it shouldn't be a statutory authority because I didn't want to turn up in front of the Senate Estimates Committee. I leave that to my Department of Treasury friends to do that. But also, I felt that it didn't really matter whether we were advisory or statutory. It's the people that's on it and the intention that comes from it that's far more important. We do contribute to government decision-making by providing advice to the government on the quality and effectiveness of tax legislation, the process for its development, and other aspects of tax design. Now, those latter two, the processes for the development and the other aspects of tax design, actually came later in the role of the Board of Tax. And I think that's because in the early days when it was first set up, business believed that they had a body that was going to be a lobby group for them. Well, we are very clearly not a lobby group for business. But also on the government side, it was felt that we perhaps could be a rubber stamp for their issues. And we said, well, we're not going to be a rubber stamp for their issues. We see ourselves very clearly as a bridge between the two. We're not going to lobby for business, but clearly we want to listen to what their issues are. But also we want to be able to give a fearless voice to the government from an independent review of what we believe the taxation should be. In developing that advice, the Board considers the optimal solution for the community as a whole, rather than focusing on individual issues or the claims of certain individuals or groups. In making recommendations, the Board is mindful of its broader objectives to simplify the tax system, reduce the compliance costs, and improve the general integrity, the quality, and the effective functioning of the taxation system. One might say, how big a role is that? You only have to ask the other question, how long is a piece of string? The board is a non-statutory advisory body, as I mentioned, and the seven private sector members of the board are drawn from business, tax, and the wider community, most of whom are private sector business people or tax practitioners. They all have a good command of the issues under review and are respected within their communities. I hope I can say that about myself. Now, the valuable expertise of board members has also been recognised, with a number of board members serving at various stages on other government teams, such as the Takeovers Panel and the government's Standard Business Reporting Project. The board has also established a standing advisory board, and in fact some of you in this room today are on that advisory board, a board of volunteers who are expert in particular taxation fields. And this panel draws together some of Australia's leading taxation professionals who have agreed to voluntarily contribute their knowledge and their expertise in assisting the board with its work. The panel members are appointed on the basis of their individual capabilities and expertise and not as representatives of particular interests. The panel provides an important additional source of advice to that provided by the business, professional and other community representative organisations with which the board has developed a very good working relationship. I mentioned earlier that these members are basically voluntary, and they are voluntary. However, from time to time, we call on their expertise in a larger specific project, and in those situations, generally, we then pay a professional rate for their services, because some of these things can take up a considerable amount of professional time. The board also importantly includes the Secretary of Treasury, Dr. Ken Henry, the Commissioner of Taxation, Michael DiCenzo, and the Office of the First Parliamentary Counsel, Peter Quiggan. And I might say right from the beginning, when it was suggested that those three, they were all different at the time when we started as individuals, but those three, I was concerned that they would not have the time to attend these board meetings and they would delegate down the line. But I must say that I'm extremely pleased that they attend every board meeting unless they have some overseas commitment or some commitment they can't make it. But we've had tremendous support from those three ex officios, and having them on the board and having them as part of the discussion has been an integral part of some of the work that we've done. And the participation of the government officials helps to ensure that the board has a good appreciation of the context in which the government takes decisions, and that the board advice is appropriately focused on some of those priorities that the government has. In addition to the Secretary of the Treasury and the Taxation Commissioner being on the board, officers of the Treasury and the Australian Taxation Office provide the board with input and expertise to assist with its projects on both a formal and an informal manner. Now, there was some criticism when it was set up that the Secretariat actually sits within Treasury, but without that sort of assistance, we just wouldn't be able to operate. The initial thought, actually, was that industry should support this particular Secretariat, but getting the industry to come together and work out how they'd fund it just didn't happen. So we went back to the government and said, we think this should be funded out of the Treasury Secretariat. But they actually are taken out of Treasury for this particular project and become part of the Board of Taxation. We also used consultants, other academics, who can provide the alternative to the official view. In fact, the budget is set up. It's a $2 million budget. In fact, we've never spent the whole budget in any one particular year. We're not doing very well in that area. But it was set up originally that about $400,000 of that $2 million is administrative. That is for the Secretariat, the board meetings, etc. And the other $1.6 is for the use of outside consultants to assist us in the projects in which we get involved. So then you've got specific outside consultants working with Treasury, working with Tax Office very closely on these particular projects. So there's an outside point of view. And then in addition, we have been assisted in projects by a Secretariat which also has on secondment for a period of time, say 12 months or 18 months, people from the Big Four, and we've had them from Ernst & Young and from, in the early days, Arthur Anderson, before they disappeared. But this is a very good training ground for a young individual to come into Treasury and work with them, but also to give that outside perspective to the Secretariat. I think since the inception of the board in 2000, I do believe we have developed good credibility. I try not to say that arrogantly. I think we've got good credibility and expertise both within the business community, but certainly within the government and the Treasury and the Tax Office. We've been involved both before and after policy decisions have been made, and we have considered issues affecting individual taxpayers, small businesses, large corporates, and the not-for-profit sector. We've road-tested exposure draft legislation, such as the Draft Charities Bill 2003, and the board has also been asked to undertake post-implementation reviews of the quality and effectiveness of the legislation that was introduced. In reviews such as the Small Business Capital Gains Tax Concessions and the Non-Commercial Losses legislation, the board was able to determine if the tax laws are doing the job they were designed for. And we've always found these post-implementation reviews to be an extremely good measure, good test, to go and look at legislation that was put in place about maybe 2 to 3 years before, see whether it did meet the policy intent. If you can actually work out exactly what the policy intent was, that's always a little bit difficult. If it didn't, why didn't it? If it didn't and can be corrected, what needs to be done to correct it? Is it just a technical correction or does it need legislation? So consequently, it's a good test to say, if these things did occur, how can we make sure they don't occur in the future? The board's also been asked to consult with the community on proposed policy, and the review of international taxation arrangements in 2003 provided significant opportunities for stakeholders to provide community input, which contributed significantly to stronger policy outcomes. Of all the recommendations we put through from that international taxation arrangements, 75% were accepted immediately by the government, and in fact have now been either implemented and put in place. So the only one that didn't was the foreign tax credits, and there the government felt they didn't close the door and say we can't do it. They just said you've got to do a lot more homework on that one yet. Now the board can also assist in testing new concepts. In consultations in 2002 on the tax value method, and there are quite a, I had dark hair before I started that one, and there's quite a few of you around the tables today who are deeply involved in that examination of the tax value method for calculating taxable income that resulted in a recommendation that ultimately we said the government should cease further work on the tax value method. But this recommendation reflected the concerns raised with the board that while the tax value method offered benefits in some areas, it would generate greater complexity and uncertainty and result in substantial transitional costs. And so having listened to all of the arguments, having road tested them, tested them out completely, we went back to the government and said, this just won't work. Now, I know many of you in this room were probably quite pleased that we came up with that recommendation, but what I was pleased about and what many other people were pleased about was that we gave it a hell of a good airing to see if this alternative method could possibly work. One of the persons who's in the room today, Peter Byrne, helped me immensely on that whole project. He taught me what I do know about tax, which is about that much. More recently, the board played a significant role in the identification and the repeal of the inoperative provisions in the Income Tax Assessment Act through its 2005 review, which culminated in the repeal of over 4,100 pages, that's out of 10,000 pages, of inoperative and redundant legislation in 2006. Now, some people say, so what? So, okay, you've just taken out all the redundancies. But this all stemmed from the question we asked, can we get rid of the two acts? Can we get rid of the 36 and the 97 Act and bring them back together? When we asked the industry, would they like to do this, the answer was overwhelmingly, yes, please, let's get down to one act. But when we asked the next question, well, how would you like to do it, we got answers all over the place. And we realised then, and particularly having been through the tax value method discussions before, that you can't bite off too much at once. And so we said, well, let's do it in bite-sized chunks. Let's have at least a 10-year program to see if we can work towards getting rid of the two acts and bring it down to one act. And the first step, we said, was let's get rid of the clutter. Let's take out a lot of the crap that's already in there and see if we can just make it a little easier to find the real meat that's in it. And we as a board actually, after a 12-month study, came up with about 2,100 pages And when we presented it to Treasury, they took one look and said, look, we think we can go even further than that. And it was Treasury that actually then found other ways and means of taking it on to 4,100 pages. And anybody who's been involved, we were getting up to the stage, we had four volumes of the Tax Act. The paper was as thin as you could get it, and the print was about as small as you could get being able to read it. It was very close to going into the fifth volume. But I think now we've brought it back to some arguable level. But the real benefit we're looking for is ultimately to bring it down to one act. The board can also look at issues affecting the tax system more broadly and complementing the findings arising from the Banks Review during 2006 and 2007, the board undertook a scoping study of small business tax compliance costs, which examined the key issues affecting small business tax compliance costs. This approach allowed the board to identify system-wide issues that the government could consider in easing compliance issues across the tax system. And that board report is currently being considered by government. We put the report in actually just before the last election, so it didn't go too far. And we've resubmitted again to this current government, and they're looking at it at the moment. Interestingly enough, when we started this project, I thought it was a terrific one because I thought we'd really find the answer to a lot of these questions. We would be able to solve a lot of the problems. The only thing we found is there is no silver bullet to solving some of these complexity and compliance costs. There's a whole lot of small things that need to be done. We're in the eighth year of the operation, and I think the brief overview of our output demonstrates our success in at least contributing to good tax system successes, but clearly we still have a long, long way to go. Just a quick look at the current reviews. The list of reviews currently before the board also has the potential to add considerably to better taxation outcomes in the future. The subject matter of the reviews is quite diverse. It ranges from the taxation treatment of off-market share buybacks and the anti-tax deferral regimes to the treatment of the management investment funds and investigating the possibility of applying the review of self-assessment, the ROSA rulings, amendment periods and interest regimes to federal taxes more generally. Most recently, on the 22nd of February, the Assistant Treasurer, Chris Bowen, asked the board to conduct a review of tax arrangements applying to managed funds. And this review will provide options for introducing a specific tax regime for managed investment trusts to reduce complexity, increase certainty, and minimise compliance costs. While diverse, the reviews before the board all share common threads. Reducing complexity for taxpayers is the best one that we can go for. And then through that, reducing compliance costs, and as I've said many times, increasing the efficiency of the taxation system. I'll concentrate my remarks today on those reviews in which the board is further down the track in the current area, namely an examination of the taxation treatment of off-market share buybacks and the anti-tax deferral regimes, as these demonstrate in a practical sense the way the board operates and how it contributes to improve tax outcomes. And incidentally, when we were given these two tasks to do, I said to the board at the time, I said, we've been given two very hot potatoes here. One is hugely political and one is hugely technical. And it's proved to be exactly thus. The greater use of off-market share buybacks as a capital management tool has given rise to some strongly held views on their appropriateness. The taxation treatment also involves considerable complexity for taxpayers and considerable administration load for the taxation office. Last year, the board released an extensive and widely available discussion paper that sought views on issues raised around the equity, the efficiency and the simplicity of off-market share buybacks. And in response to that discussion paper, the board has heard the diverse, very diverse, sometimes contradictory views on a number of issues that go to the effectiveness and equity of the current taxation treatment in off-market share buybacks. Now, we see our role as to consider those views, but not to adjudicate between them. We've been given very valuable insights into how they are used and how they affect shareholders and taxpayers more generally. So we're now weighing up the competing views against the broader consideration of the role and the functioning of the tax system as a whole. We've pretty much reached the final stage of that report, and we'll probably be putting into the government very soon, and then it's up to the government to review and release when they're ready. I think with the fact that we've got a budget coming up in May and obviously going to be an extremely tough budget, it probably won't get much of an airing until after the budget is true. Now, the other area, Australia has several anti-tax deferral regimes, which are designed to prevent resident taxpayers from using foreign entities to defer or avoid Australian tax. The controlled foreign company, foreign investment fund, transferor, trust, and deemed present entitlement regimes. And the objectives of this review are twofold. First, to reduce the complexity and the compliance costs associated with anti-tax deferral regimes, including whether the current regimes can be collapsed into a single regime. Can we collapse the four into a single regime? To examine whether the anti-tax deferral regimes strike an appropriate balance between effectively countering tax deferral and unnecessarily inhibiting Australians from competing in the global economy. A pretty tough task to try and get those two things to come together properly. Now, the board's approach to this review has been to consider the very broad principles that should apply to the design. We will then conduct further consultations to allow the broad principles to be expressed as detailed recommendations for the government. It's a different way in which we've ever done it before. Normally, you just have one series of consultations, we pull it all together, give recommendations to the government. In this one, we believe we had to try and find out, now, what are the desired outcomes we really do want in a high-principled fashion? I believe through consultation we've got that, and we've put that before the government now, but now you've got to take that and get it into legislation that's meaningful, not as complex, and as simple. And so we're going back for consultation to the industry, to you people, to say, OK, here's the desired outcomes we want, but now can we get this into good legislation? Then on the area of consultation, in addition to the specific reviews, the board has an ongoing role in this consultation. We did one report in 2002, the first report, and the government accepted every one of our recommendations from that consultation report. I believe, and I think many of you in this room will agree, that it definitely did improve consultation, but after a couple of years we felt we needed to go further. In February of last year we put in a second report to the government, further increasing consultation processes, and once again the government accepted those. They are a step up in the consultation process. But even then we believe it still can go further in proper consultation. And so over the past 12 months we've been working very closely with the organisations within the industry, saying that we should be involved much earlier in the development of the tax legislation, at the stage the policy intent is being decided, and that way we can help design the legislation much better than getting the legislation and then trying to correct things after that. And at this stage, in working with Assistant Treasurer Bowen, I believe we'll be working pretty much down that track. He has asked for a review from another group just to see if there's some way that you can move faster from the time the policy intent is announced until legislation is produced. And Neil Wilson is heading up a small team of six people to give a recommendation to the Treasurer, but we're working very closely with Neil Wilson and his team. But that consultation is a terribly important part of our work. I got involved very much in the mid-80s to late 80s in workplace cultural change. And that's where I really learnt that if you do consultation properly, it's going to take you quite a bit longer up front, but the implementation time is much shorter. And that's what we're finding. If we do consultation better at the beginning, the legislation that gets written is much better legislation in the long run. So the board's core function is to provide advice to the Treasurer on the quality and effect of the tax law. You're sick of hearing me say that, but that's really what we're after. The processes for its development, including the processes of community consultation and other aspects of tax design. Ongoing improvements in these aspects of tax design will be crucial to ensuring the effectiveness of the business taxation system and the tax system more broadly. Now, whatever the future policy direction of the tax system, ensuring that the policy is appropriately reflected in legislation that taxpayers can understand and comply with its crucial factor in the policy's ability to deliver to its aims. That's what we're seeking to do. It's not the sexiest thing in the world. If I sit down at a dinner table with some friends on a Saturday night and they said, you're in the role of the Board of Taxation, tell us how you can get our tax rate down. Well, we're not into that. We're into that unsexy business of trying to get less complex legislation. And that's pretty much the role of the Board of Taxation. And if we can help in that process, that's one part of what you people are discussing today. Thank you.